Showers possible in the west that could come with the odd rumble of thunder, but after a rather cloudy start, a much brighter afternoon in prospect compared with Monday, so it will feel that bit warmer. 17 the high, just some low cloud to eastern coast. And for Scotland, a lot more cloud generally speaking, particularly in the north after the sunshine of Monday. Misty low cloud towards eastern coast, 13 degrees here, but in some brightness breaking through the cloud elsewhere, 16 or 17 the high. Alan.
Thank you, Matt. This is BBC Radio 4, where now we begin the new book of the week. 9 years ago, the writer and journalist Richard Benson published a best-selling memoir, The Farm, which told the story of his father's family farm in the Yorkshire Wolds. His new book, The Valley, is a personal history of his mother's side of the family through 100 years of life in the mining towns and villages of South Yorkshire. The reader is Richard Stacey.
It's a lovely day tomorrow. Tomorrow is a lovely day. Come and feast your tear-dimmed eyes on tomorrow's clear blue skies.
In the Pennine Hills above Barnsley in the West Riding of Yorkshire, a thin, clear spring breaks from a grass bank, trickles down a hillside, and at the bottom becomes a runnel, draining water from the hill. Over several miles, the runnel widens into a stream and then into a river that has carved a deep valley through the hills on which Barnsley is built. Leaving the town, the river turns south and slows and opens up a broad, shallow valley of rich pastureland and water meadows. The river is called the Dearn. From the Old English word Dearn or Dian, meaning hidden or secret or dark. Its valley, 5 miles long, is properly called the Lower Dearn Valley, but the people who live there usually just call it the Dearn Valley, or more simply, the Dearn. Until the early 18th century, the Dearn's meadow and pasture was sparsely populated, with stone farms and villages and cottage rows scattered like limestone stars in a green grass sky. Its people lived by farming, weaving and village crafts, and by digging coal in small bell pits or on outcrops on the valley shoulders. Then businessmen came with new machines and steam engines and used them to take coal from outcrops and shallow seams to the west and the south of the valley, and other businessmen built canals and navigations to carry the coal to the cities. In the 1840s, railway men were sent to lay iron tracks that crossed the valley first one way, then another, and then another, in deep cuttings and iron bridges that ran above the lanes and through the villages. The coal and canals and railways and massive labour brought entrepreneurs, glassmakers, brickmakers, iron founders and textile weavers, and these men built new factories, foundries and mills. Day and night their steam trains sent out sparks that set fire to haystacks and crops in the fields, and hung the valley with trails of grey steam as they hauled coal trucks from the pits to the iron foundries and the glassworks and the mills and to the docks of Hull and Goole. Up in the Pennine Hills above Smoky Barnsley, the spring now ran into a mill pond dug out for a cotton mill, and the pond's overflow fed into the runnel. Down in the valley, men altered the course of the river and poisoned its water, so it became a slow and lifeless black sludge. But the new industry provided jobs, and for many people the work paid far better than the old work on the land. It is to the Lower Dearn Valley that Walter Parkin brings Annie and their 4 children in the early years of the 1920s. Golfer, lying halfway between Doncaster and Barnsley, is one of 4 villages parted only by a few small fields in the heart of the valley. To the north, Thurnsker. To the west, Highgate. To the south, Bolton-upon-Dearn. 20 years earlier, there were farming hamlets, but with 6 collieries sunk within walking distance of them all, they are now expanding frontier towns, their frontiers dark and underground. The Parkins move into a terraced house with steep stairs, thin walls and 3 bedrooms, built on a crossroads near the Wesleyan Methodist Chapel. The family worships at the chapel, Walter stern and serious, Annie enjoying the socialising and the hymns. They are not well off, but they are at least in their own home. Walter travels to colliery sites where shaft sinking is needed, although in the summers and autumn he'll sometimes come out of the pit to work on farms, ploughing and handling the horses. Annie attends spiritualist meetings, sometimes taking the children with her. She is respected for her powers. When a young girl goes missing, a local police inspector asks Annie to help find her, or at least her body. Annie sees in her crystal ball the girl's corpse lying in a well in a farm, and her vision turns out to be true. One day, her daughter, Winnie Parkin, is standing out in the street on her own when she notices beside her a gypsy girl of her own age. None of the women walking past on the way to the shops can see her, but Winnie hears her saying she's come to watch over her and take care of her, whatever happens, for the rest of her life. Knowing what it means, Winnie walks into the house and tells her mum that she's met her guardian angel. Annie, who of course has had one since she was a young girl, is pleased. "She'll watch over you," she says. "All people have them, you know, but they cannot always have the sight for them." When Winnie reaches the age of 14 in December 1923, she goes into service as a housemaid. Service pays less well than the mills, but mill girls are brash, says Walter, and he won't have her working with them. She finds work at the doctor's house in Goldthorpe. Wages, 6 shillings a week. She will get nothing for a month, and then 5/6 of it, all but a shilling, will be handed over to her mum. She hears about better paid work at a large modern travellers' inn on a junction of the Great North Road near Doncaster. Abutting a newly opened golf course and country club, it is the kind of place that has flourished with the popularity of the motor car. Staff can live in, so when Winnie obtains a position as a general chambermaid and cleaner there, she escapes her home and Walter's temper. Her boss, Mrs. Bly, the wife of the good-looking get-ahead owner Thomas Bly, is kind to her, and their daughter Marjorie, Miss Marjorie to Winnie, is friendly and protective. Miss Marjorie is 3 years older than Winnie, beautiful, radiant with glamour, and full of stories from the new stylish arcades and dance halls of Doncaster. She comes back from shopping trips in her father's car with silk stockings, cloche hats, makeup and perfumes with French names. "Try some of this, Winnie," she says, and applies deep red lipstick to the younger girl's tremulous, awestruck mouth. Miss Marjorie is the only woman Winnie knows whose parents do not labour for a living, and she tries to ape her manners and attitudes, as her mam had copied her mistresses before her. Winnie might not have her bone structure, and she could neither afford makeup nor risk it in her father's sight, but it costs nothing to mimic Miss Marjorie's elegant mannerisms which, she imagines, set her apart from the rougher girls in Goldthorpe. Miss Marjorie encourages her to share her feelings about Rudolph Valentino, after she's been to see his films, and in turn tells her about the new music, jazz and quick steps. Winnie says she hadn't been dancing yet. "You want to be going soon," says Miss Marjorie. "Have some fun." At home, though, fun remains a vexed and dangerous area. Walter alternates between gentleness and rage, and despite Winnie being of working age, he still addresses and treats her as a child when she's there at weekends and on her half-day Wednesdays. The only difference her age makes is to increase Walter's aggressive protection of her against men, most of whom he regards as idlers, gamblers and ne'er-do-wells. Winnie does not go with boys, but this only makes Walter more suspicious. One night in 1925, when Winnie is 15... her father sees her talking to a young man at Goldthorpe's fish and chip shop. When she gets back to the house later, Walter instructs her to go to her bedroom and undress to her underwear. If Walter's eldest had been a boy, the boy might have turned on him and stopped it. But Winnie is a girl, and this is how it works for girls. You get punished if the men decide you have erred, and if you complain, you get punished again, only harder. Not bearing the discipline is a greater crime than the crime itself. As she stands there and hears his steps on the narrow wooden stairs, She works out how this was her fault. He is a good man, fighting to cope with what has happened to him in the war. If he is a good man, and he's been so disgusted with her, then what is she? She stops thinking and just decides she will not cry. She won't let him see that the beating works, and won't upset him by weeping tears that will induce the self-pity of a thwarted man. They can set that off. Walter, face full of contempt, looks at her corset. She turns from him and unhooks it, exposing her bare back, mottled, pale as pearls. She hears the pop and loose jingle of the belt buckle as he loosens it, the slither of the belt through the loops. Bend over. The tone is the one he uses when dismissing a lie or sending out a disgraced dog. There's acting like a whore, Winnie. So stay away from them lads. The gypsy girl is with her, beside her, and telling her she will be all right. He uses the buckle end on her, which tells her he is at his angriest. The beating lasts until he's exhausted. She feels rising wheels. She tells herself not to cry. She loves him, and because she loves him, does not want him to see her weeping. She has learnt to hold it in. He could never make me cry, she will tell her daughters, and then her granddaughter, many years from now. However hard he hit me, I wouldn't. A year later, in June 1926, Winnie Parkin is working with her father among the dry soil and thirsty vegetables of his allotment on the edge of the village. It is her half day, and she's come to help him. He's always calmer out here, when he's well enough to come, moving in his own time, his sick back slowly rising and falling and rising again among the canes and the plant tops. Winnie fetches water for him and pulls up knotgrass and nettles. This June, Walter is locked out with the rest of the British miners following the coal owners' reduction of their wages. Walter tells Winnie stories about the lockout. The hero is always Arthur Cook, the miners' leader, with his rallying cry, "Not a penny off the pay, not a minute on the day." The villains are Winston Churchill and Churchill's supposed friend, Nancy Astor. Churchill is Chancellor of the Exchequer in the Conservative government and keen to confront the miners. "He reckons he'll drive miners back down the holes like rats. I'll give him rats. Like his fancy piece, Lady Astor." "Her that called miners the worms of the earth," says Winnie. "That's what she said, isn't it? The worms of the earth toiling underground." Winnie shakes her head and trembles, the anger felt on her family's behalf more potent than any she would feel on her own. The stories are not in the national newspapers, but then they wouldn't be, would they? Officially recorded or not, they dramatise what the miners know to be true, and for Winnie, they become history. It is the line about worms, the one supposedly uttered by a woman, that she will remember and pass down to her children and her grandchildren. Her father, who saved his commanding officer in the war, who was a healer, who did his best, though he could be cruel, dismissed as a scrap of blindness in the soil by a wealthy woman with a name like a perfume.
Richard Stacey was reading From the Valley by Richard Benson. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. Tomorrow we follow the author's grandmother Winnie as she attempts to free herself from her father's rules of the house. This is BBC Radio 4. It's 12 minutes to 1. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015, today, Tuesday the 29th of April. The general synopsis at 1800. Complex low, southern England to northern France, 1011. Slow moving, deepening, 1007 by 1800 Tuesday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira. Mainly northerly, 4 or 5, increasing 6 or 7 in Viking and North Utsira. Fog patches at first, moderate, occasionally very poor, becoming good. 40s, Cromarty. Variable, 3 or 4, becoming easterly or northeasterly, 4 or 5 in North 40s and Cromarty. Fog patches, moderate or good, occasionally very poor. 4th, Tyne, Dogger. Variable, 3 or 4, drizzle.